Welcome. You're listening to the Version 4 Podcast, and I'm Verse Saloon, and this is episode 18. All right, look, I'm being exposed right now. I'm caught in 4K. I'm here with my, well, it's not my setup, but this IKEA setup. And, you know, I'm going to be building this set while I do this podcast because, you know, I'm not a streamer. I think streaming would have been lit. I think I want to start streaming because this would have been a much better stream than it is a podcast. I don't know. We'll see. This might be one of my best podcasts ever. But right now, here I am on the floor of my childhood home building IKEA furniture that's not going into my abode. This is just because, as always, it is assumed by the fairer sex that if they buy IKEA furniture, simply a man will simply materialize to construct it. But such is life. This is the way of the world. Someone's got to hunt the food. Someone's got to prepare the food. Someone's got to buy the IKEA furniture, and someone's got to pick it up and carry it and construct it, and then again carry it again. And you know, the IKEA setup, the instruction manual always says to use two people to build it, but I don't think I've ever built furniture, IKEA furniture, with two people in tow. So this is going to be, as always, quite the experience. I am heavily caffeinated. I'm zooted. I'm in it to win it. So yeah, we're going to be building some furniture, and I'm going to take breaks in the construction process to vent, I imagine. I'm probably going to be doing a lot of venting, but we're also going to talk about some of the things I've been spilling on, some of the alpha I've been spilling on the timeline. First and foremost, I got blocked by Michael, whatever the hell his name is, from The Big Short. Michael Scott, because wasn't it played by the dude from The Office? I got blocked by that dude, and that's kind of insane, actually. I get blocked by a lot of C-list celebrities, or I like Taylor Lorenz, and what's that porn star's name? The Asian one that's in crypto. What's her name? Jenna Sparks? No. Brenna Sparks. I got blocked by her. Obviously, I'm blocked by the satanic pedo, Chrissy Teigen, sacrificing babies to Moloch, of course. I'm blocked by her. And then now the dude from The Big Short, which is crazy because I actually like his stuff. He's a metalhead. I like his work. I appreciate shorting the housing market. That is base. I like that movie. You know, it is kind of insane that, that I've somehow been blocked by him, but it's probably because I leaked too much alpha. He doesn't want to, he's intimidated by how much raw talent and market, sense I have. And I get that. It's not easy to be someone like myself. So that's one thing. And also, you know, here I am in my childhood home on the floor with, Ingolf, chairs in front of me. That is the brand name of this particular chair. I have not opened the box yet, but I'm going to open it soon. And I'm sitting here on the floor, on this carpeted floor, with one of my old bookshelves in front of me. Mad random stuff on this bookshelf. And you know, I'm disavowing books on the timeline, and you know, Logo has to come with his sarcastic remark on the timeline talking about, when did you start reading, bruh? I've been reading longer than you've been alive. Actually, I don't know. He might be older than me. It's very possible. But even still, I got on this bookshelf, I got mad books. None of that's ever helped me. Not a single one of these books has ever helped me. Maybe Heidegger. I got Gerd Eschel Bach on this ish. I got Ray Dalio. I got what's his face? Aldous Huxley. I got this animal liberation book from when I was crazy vegan. I got Mad Young on this, but I got so much stuff on this bookshelf. Uncle Tom's Cabin, I've actually read that, which is really funny. All 500 some odd pages of it. You know, and you have the audacity to tell me I haven't been reading. I've done more reading than I care to admit. And what's hilarious is I actually don't even use physical books that much. Despite the density of this shelf in front of me, I actually do most of my reading online via PDF. I've actually always been a bigger fan of ebooks. I know this is a disgrace to say. People like the feel of tangible books. It gives you a different experience. It's nice to log off. And there's like I feel like there's strain on your eyes when you read on the computer. Like your eyes can set better. Like they can rest when they're reading actual paper. It doesn't feel, there's none of that. Even though we don't notice it because the frame rate of the computer is faster than our eyes can perceive. It is actually a bunch of flashing lights, right? So you have flashing lights in your face, especially if you don't have a redshift. It's blue light flashing in your face. It's actually a kind of a strain on your eyes. So it doesn't have the same effect. Plus, there's a phenomenological difference between reading a book and reading something on a screen. So that's also understated, and I try to ignore that because, you know, I'm just like the rest of you. I'm permanently and terminally and extremely online. So as a consequence of this, right, there's no online offline duality anyway, right? People like to make a lot of Gen X people who've been getting in my notifications recently because I made one tweet like a week ago and they're still responding to it like that's even real anymore. And which only furthers my point about Gen X being online. Bro, I get so much hate responses from this one tweet I made a week ago. And it's like every other day some Gen X person responding to it. Like, I care. Like, I don't care whatsoever. I'm over it, guys. I'm over it. But they keep responding with their dumb takes about, you know, Gen X being online first. I'm like, yo, anyway, whatever. I've been, you know, I do a lot of my reading from the screen. And it's never helped me one bit. It hasn't helped me one iota. If anything, it's hurt me. I imagine without these detours and without having read a lot of these books, I wouldn't have taken some of the detours in life I would have taken. And I'd probably be OD rich right now, chilling with a wife and kids, just vibing. But here I am instead. Alas, right? Actually, I can say with certainty I'd probably be OD rich if I never read a book. Anyway, that's not the point. I'm not going to sit here and think about life that could have been. Instead, I'm going to sit here and look at this IKEA instruction manual and hope that the universal language of pictograms is enough to help me construct this monstrosity of a desk stool. You know, someone's got to do it, you know? That's at the end of the day, someone's got to build these furniture. There has to be street cleaners. There's a hierarchy, a caste system, and my place in the caste is furniture constructor. I'm not even constructing it. Assembler. A furniture assembler. That is my use in this world. Stomach growling. But anyway, I do take personal offense to imply that when even in a joking manner, one implies I haven't done a lot of reading. It's just disgraceful. Disgraceful. Just because I don't flaunt it, just because I hide it behind layers of comedy, just because I, you know, reference my book reading as anime, doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean I don't know the underlying topic or that I didn't read the underlying book, right? Just because, you know, I can talk about fear and trembling via the lyrics of Yuri on Ice opening one. Can't stop us now, the moment of peace. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were born to make history. You know, just because I can, you know, articulate the underlying ideas about the, you know, leap of faith that Kierkegaard talks about in Fear and Trembling with my man's Abraham. You don't think that I can talk about how, you know, Abraham was willing to take this leap of faith and act in alignment with his faith because he believed in the the rationality of human understanding and human reason is impossible to understand the broader picture, and that it is simply by taking that leap of faith that he could have, you know, went on the journey to sacrifice his son, right? Just because, you know, I can gather all that from a minute and a half song from an ice skating anime. Doesn't imply that I didn't read the book. I've read Fear and Trembling, bro. Okay? You know, Kierkegaard figured, came up with that walking around town for 2 hours a day in what's the name of that European place with the F? Something with an F, whatever. You know what I'm saying? He's able to figure out just walking around. You don't think I could have figured this out from watching anime? Of course I could have. I even got visual medium. He didn't have access to the most pristine animation, to 12 episodes of hot, homoerotic, weirdly aromantic, completely non-sexual ice skating anime, right? He didn't have access to that. I do. Okay, so it's, of course, it is not to be taken for granted, my access to the muse, to the same divinity, the same spark of inspiration that Kierkegaard had. I can achieve even faster thanks to Morphic Resonance. It's already been done once. Of course I can do it. It's that simple. But anyway, reading books never got me anywhere. It never gets anyone anywhere. It's an act of detriment. And now that anime is accepted, you know what I'm saying? You're better off simply just talking about the anime, right? If I went on a date with a girl and you were like, yo, you know, yeah, my favorite book is Twilight of the Idols by Friedrich Nietzsche, right? That's lame. That's super lame, right? But instead, if you're like, you know, I'm really into, I'm trying to think of an anime parallel. That one's a hard one. Let's not do that one. Let's do an easier anime parallel. Just be like, yo, you know what? Yeah, I'm really into deontology, and you know, I really think that Kant's Kingdom of Ends and his deontological, the categorical imperative, I think that that's pretty critical. And it's from my reading of Kant that, yeah, that's lame. That's not dropping panties, right? You're not getting any from that. You know what's going to get you some? If you're like, you know what, I really am into Death Note, and the way that Kira executes his form of justice by writing names in the Death Note, and with the absolutism and the cyclical nature of the storytelling, it's a perfect example of a form of ethics that, you know, I think is not demonstrated. You know, see, that's what I'm talking about. That's how you get into the panties, girl. Everyone loves Death Note, bro. Everyone loves Death Note. Absolutely no one's gonna be like, yo, that's not, you sound mad cool. Why is Ubuntu trying to update while I'm talking right now? That's so disrespectful. Anyway, right? Kant is cringe. Death Note is based. Simple, right? Let's do, just for the sake of the rule of three, let's do a third one. We got Kierkegaard, we got Kant, Heidegger, bam, right? I could talk about Dasein, I could talk about Being in Time. I've read that cover to cover with annotations, right? The German version. I see it right here, hardcover, black and white, with the black and white dust jacket, right? I could talk about Dasein, and I could talk about how Dasein's always already aware of his death. I could talk about that. I could talk about how anxiety is based in fear and uncertainty of the future. I can talk about being present, and you know, I can talk about care and how Dasein is driven. I could talk about all these things, or I could talk about one of the best anime ever made, who directly inspired not only the manga, directly inspired Ichiro Oda, and the anime has literally made me cry for no reason. Your Lie in April, Shimatsu no whatever. I could talk about that, right? I could talk about how my man's how homegirl was dying, and my man's was driven by anxiety, and his inability to perform was based in his anxiety and living in the past instead of living in the present, and behaving with the understanding of his own mortality, his own being toward, he was not behaving as a being towards death. he was thinking about the past, and he was thinking about his anxiety of performances. And because he wasn't present, because he wasn't living ontologically, right? He wasn't in the ontic. He was living in historicity, right? Because of that, he wasn't able to perform, right? It's only when he was present and acting with care with homegirl that he was able to, you know, live authentically as a being towards death. I could talk about that. Or, you know, I could talk about Dasein, and I could talk about Mr. Nazi Heidegger and get no bitches. Or I could talk about Uriah and April. 24 episodes of pure hot gas of fuego. Watch it with your girl, and then next thing you know, panties dropping. See, this is what people don't understand, and this is what they don't understand. But that's why you have me. But look, I've been talking too much. Let me get some work done on this IKEA. BRB.
Round one. Fight.
So I just finished the first chair, right? And relatively painless. I still have a couple other chairs and another desk to finish, so I'm sure my frustration levels will increase dramatically. But let's just note, here's something that has come to pass because I'm here building this furniture, right? I'm already doing something obnoxious that I don't really feel like doing, right? I'm already, you know, being put out of my, I'm already doing something I don't feel like doing, right? But now because I'm visible, now because I'm already begun to help, now I'm being asked to do more things on top of the thing I'm already being asked to do, right? So now it's like, okay, not only do you have to build this furniture, but while you're here, can you take this person to this place, da 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 da? And it's like, this is what happens. People just start, when you start doing things for people, they just start assuming that they can just volunteer you for tasks. Like, once you say yes to one thing, you're now at their mercy, right? And it's especially family and your friends will do this to a lot, and it's always women specifically. I don't feel like dudes do this, but women specifically, and even more so your family, and even more so your wife or girlfriend. Once you say yes to one thing, you're locked in for any number of petty tasks that don't really matter, right? And it's kind of like when you play a fighting game, there's kind of like a priority system when you enter commands, right? So if you enter command in Street Fighter, there's like a low, medium, high priority system about which button comes out first, right? And so I've already said yes to this small task, obnoxious task, time-consuming task, but relatively small, petty task, of assembling furniture, right? So this is a small petty task that I've accepted. Now, consequently, because I've accepted the small petty task, there's already active frames now, right? My hitbox has been I'm in block stun. Well, I'm not in block stun because I didn't block. So I'm in hit stun. Right, so since I'm in hit stun and they already hit me with the low forward, now that they can hit me with the target combo and hit me with the medium kick into the fierce strong right or whatever, into the fierce, into the heavy punch. Now that we got the heavy punch, there's, you know, they're in plus frames. So next thing you know, it's DP, and that's it. I'm on the ground. I'm stunned. It's over. Right. So to carry out the analogy for those of you who don't play Street Fighter, essentially, I've already acquiesced and agreed to do the furniture. So then now I can, now that they know I'm free because they can see me, I'm also chauffeur. And then after you become chauffeur, it's like, well, you're already here. Why don't you do it? It, you know, you guys get the point, right? But anyway, this is only one chair in. Okay, let me get the second chair. I'm gonna go to a break earlier than usual because I gotta get this. I gotta get make some more progress now that I've finished busting people around. Halfway point. Welcome back. Damn, I just caught a glimpse. I feel like I'm gaining weight right now. It's not good. I'm trying to bulk up, get juicy, get saucy, but you know, there's some. I feel like I'm having a little bit of a dirty bulk right now. It's upsetting. I gotta get on top of that. But I'm like halfway into this IKEA set. We just a new combatant has entered the arena. Torn Vikan, a table. This, I don't know if it's a table. This might be considered a dresser or a bureau. I don't really know. Torn Vikan. But anyway, during the last portion, my finger was sliced open. I am cursed by Viking. A Viking curse has been put on me. The IKEA monoculture, which destroyed ancient pagan lands, has been cursed by the Vikings, such that I have now been mutilated via a cardboard box because of these trash, like these cardboard flimsy fucking furniture here or whatever. My finger was bleeding incessantly. I needed to get crazy glue. I couldn't find crazy glue. I am also cursed by horses, by all the dead horses, thanks to, within the astral plane has cursed humanity, and me specifically, apparently, for all the horses consumed in glue factories. I now cannot find glue to heal myself, to close my wound, so I have blood on everything. But it's fine. I've stopped the bleeding, and now I'm here to tackle the second half of my journey. I have completed two full stools, like bar stools, and now here I am. It's much later, and I've done a bunch of other errands in between this fucking building process, of course. But I'm here. We made it, guys. No, we're not lamenting. I'm here. I mean, I mourn the loss of my finger, but outside of that, everything else is Gucci. I got some Five Guys. They completely ruined my order, so I paid like $20 for the wrong meal. You know how Five Guys works. Yeah, I'm trying. Anyway, enough about me. Enough about me. Well, the point of my, I was going to come back here and talk about a few things. First and foremost, I just read this. I've been doing a lot of I've been mining Twitter for my content recently, which has been good actually, because I actually write lengthy ass tweets, but most of which probably could have been turned into a blog post. But then when I try to write the blog post, I'm like, I got the point across already. What's the point? What's the point of expanding? Why should I expand on this topic? I've already got my point across. The simpler the better. I can move on to something new, something novel, something that gets the dopamine flowing again. The dopamine must flow like Dune, like the spice in Dune, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, just to harken back, is that how the expression goes? Harken back to the conversation earlier with respect to book reading, right? To that book learning. I think that, I don't know if it's, I don't know, a lot of people on this part of the corner of Twitter tend to agree, but I don't know if it's widely agreed upon, that there's a, I think it's very, I think the appeal, oh wow, I'm looking in my light, and it doesn't matter, sorry, I think the appeal to like trying to sound smart as opposed to saying something interesting, I think that's a very, it's a kind of, not seductive, it's a, it is kind of seductive. It is an easy trap to fall into. It's seductive, right? You get a signal to the people you want to signal to that you're intelligent or you're of merit. You do all the correct signaling, but you don't, like, you never actually say anything worthwhile, right? Even if you are, like, it's very few and far between when you're speaking within that, like, codex of learned academia of the managerial elite, that it's very rare that you actually say something valuable, right? And just as like I mentioned kind of in jest about how a lot of the concepts from books like Being in Time from Heidegger or Fear and Trembling from Kierkegaard, you can find those exact same concepts distilled in you know, popular culture, right? You can, if you have an eye out, you can see them. Now, what the excuse me, what books provide is like a shortcut. You're essentially downloading someone that you don't have to have the revelation of their idea, right? The books provide you a shortcut. You got to download the file, put it in your head. The bandwidth is lower, right? Like you have to actually read the book. So I guess like the upload speed. Yeah, the upload speed's low. So they downloaded it. All right, no, the writer uploaded it to the book, and the download speed's low. Okay, so the download speed is low, but the content's rich, right? It's just an uncompressed file. You can get similar download speeds, but with compressed files, via pop culture or whatever. But again, or like, you know, YouTube videos, TikToks, etc. But beyond that, you don't really get the streamlined idea, right? So if these people spend so much time trying to sound the part, right? They're all trying to signal that they belong to the club, right? It's like they want to make sure you know that they went to the XYZ caliber of school, so that's why they're speaking in a specific cadence. And they do the hand motions, like for example, like the finger pointer, like trying to grab a little cup. Like think of your hand like a claw. They do that finger pointer thing, and they like turn it like up and down. Like I don't know. I wish I could show you the video. It's just like there's so many like stupid hand motions that they do that show that you're part of a club, right? It's like, you know, and it's kind of like corporate talk, and that's kind of my issue with Clubhouse right now, right? I was ranting about this on the timeline, and like I keep getting harassed by Gen X, but the reason why they're harassing me is because I was saying that Clubhouse, well, first of all, I was saying that quarantine has brought Gen X online, right? there are Gen X's, there are like a very small minority of people from that generation, like 1% of them, I would say, maybe max 3%, but it's like third standard deviation or higher of Gen X are online, right? They're the people who like kind of laid down the framework. They were on the bulletin board, the old school bulletins, and they just stay online, right? They were on like Usenet and stuff, right? Those people are, you know, the hackerish types, and they're still online, and they were in the online communities. They've been online this whole time, right? They got wife and kids now, but they've been, everyone knows the boomer, like a Gen X type who's been online, right? But with that said, on the whole, the generation's not online savvy. It's just well known. For that matter, millennials aren't online savvy. It is very rare, and like, again, I'm on the lower end of the millennial spectrum. Like, I'm, you know, the last few years of it, and even in 2021, right, I still can talk to people, actually before the pandemic, so it's even up until like 2020, if I would talk to people my age about you know, online communities and meeting friends online and hanging out with them in the city, or flying to XYZ place to hang out with them, or spending my time in Discord and stuff. I've talked to older Gen Z people who found that weird, right? So never underestimate. It's actually not as many people as you think that are extremely online. It's actually a rarity, right? Everyone's on the internet. Everyone has Instagram. Everyone has Facebook. Everyone has, or whatever your specific generation's social media is, right? Every boomer and their kids and whatever has Facebook, right? Everyone has Facebook. But Facebook isn't really being online, right? It's like the bare bones of it all, right? It's actually, even mentioning Facebook and like linking to Facebook shows that you're behind the times. You're lagging decades behind. Consider, like, I got on my account in Facebook in 2006, maybe 2007 max, probably 2006. Yeah, I would have had them in 2006 or 7, right? I don't know. I can't specify right now. Actually, no, I know for a fact. Yeah, whatever. It's either early 2007, late 2006. And even like signing on to it, every once in a while I have to sign on to it because of some websites forcing you, or I need to use Facebook Marketplace to find something, or I have to find a picture that I can't find on the internet anywhere else that's from like 10 years. Like, you know, sometimes you have to log on, right? And there are people my age who are still posting regularly on Facebook. I logged on to Facebook legitimately, let's say 3 months ago, when I was looking for a car, and in, like, you know, on the local marketplace, so I can just buy one in cash and move on with my day. And again, people like 20 some odd year olds with completely very fresh, like 3 hour old posts in this massive argument about wokeness on whatever stupid topic. And it's like, yo, it is insane to see people legitimately on Facebook. I understand Facebook Messenger to some degree, even though it's incredibly buggy and it's basically trash now. Like, I don't know, but they did connect it to Instagram, and I know some millennials are still on Instagram for some reason, which also dead. It's just like, never underestimate how much further ahead you are. Like, again, if you're listening to my podcast, I guarantee you're ahead of all these people that I'm talking about now. Just the places that I post it. It's on Spotify, it's on Patreon, it's on my Twitter. Like, if you found my account, it's very, very likely you're aeons ahead of these people I'm referring to, right? And this is the problem, and that's and this lack of self-awareness of the different stratifications of each generation is why they were coming for me. But back to the original point, the point I was making was about how the influx of Gen X and older millennials onto the internet because of the pandemic has brought with it like corporate speech patterns and things like Clubhouse, for example. Like, Clubhouse is essentially a conversation. It's like being in it's basically Zoom call, the social media app, right? People were like, well, we're on conference calls all day anyway for, I don't know, 20 for the entirety of the year. So they were just like, you know what? Let's just make a conference call social media platform where you talk on the phone. And I was making jokes about how it's essentially Gen X has been longing to have phone calls again. This has been like the last year or two for them has been like the highlight of their entire life. They spent their youth on the cell, on like actual landline phones, talking to people. And they've never stopped talking. I swear to God, I've never met someone over the age of 40 who doesn't stop talking on the phone for like 1 second. It's insane to me. And then now they've managed to make conference calls, corporate speech, and Clubhouse a social media platform that is essentially just being on the phone with a bunch of people in a room. I know it's VC focused, but VCs are literally all Gen X. So maybe a few boomers, but for the most part, they're all Gen X. So I don't know. I think it's weird. The online landscape right now is very strange. It's definitely much different than it has been in previous history. It is simultaneously, there's a higher, it's like Eternal September. It's the concept of Eternal September from Reddit. I don't know if it was Reddit that created the concept of Eternal September, but if I haven't, I don't know if I've mentioned it on here before, but it's essentially the influx of new users every September when school would start. Would change the energy of the board, and a lot of like new obnoxious posters would show up. So they realized, and there's the concept of Eternal September essentially came about when a critical mass of users hits, basically like the J curve on an exponential function. When you hit that knee of the curve, that September feeling of new arrivals never stops, right? And that's what the internet feels like now. It just feels like Eternal September, but on every single platform. There's no escaping it. Like, it's really hard to find a niche community. And even if you can carve out a niche, like, on Twitter, like, you know, Futurism Twitter, NRX Twitter, or Post-Rat Twitter, or whatever one you're on. I'm definitely not on Post-Rat Twitter, but I'm Post-Rat Twitter adjacent. For those who don't know the lingo, Post-Rat being, like, Post-Rationalism Twitter. It's very cringe. It's basically like the exodus from like Less Wrong and Reddit, and instead of just posting about, you know, having debates and posting about logical fallacies, they're still that same exact type of person, but now they pretty much only talk about the ethics of sex work, it seems. They all have like OnlyFans in their bio. It's very strange, but I don't like it. There's a few cool accounts like Eigenvalue. So Eigenrobot, yeah. So like, I don't know. There's cool people in there, but for the most part, not my shtick. Actually, you know who's from Post-Rat Twitter? Alex Kashuta from that interview I did with Alex. You can check her out in one of my previous episodes if you haven't already. She is straddling the line as well. Between Post-Rat Twitter and NRX type of near reactionary stuff. But to try to remember what my original point of all this was. The point of all this was, outside of Eternal September, was that the corporates, there's a push to always, there's this constant signaling of this striving managerial class that, like, as BAP would say, and there's so many people, and I feel it every single day, and I feel like it's just getting worse, especially now that everyone has a college degree, and college isn't, like, really prestigious anymore, college isn't really prestigious anymore because they just churn out degrees now, and there's no stratification, like, there used to be a stratification, it's still kind of in effect, but they hide it now, between qualities of universities, right? And it used to actually mean something. Like, we still acknowledge this stratification. If I, for example, was saying I went to, Mississippi State Technical College, right, at whatever, I don't know. I literally couldn't tell you three cities in Mississippi, right? That doesn't sound like a particularly prestigious school. If I said I went to UCLA, you go, okay, you went to a tier one flagship school. If I was like, oh, I went to Harvard, you go, oh, you went to, you know what I mean? There's stratifications, and we all recognize it immediately in the, when we say the name, that tiering is understood intuitively, but it's not understood by, yeah, the tiering is understood intuitively, right? But now that America has this weird way of democratizing social class, even though we all know it, and we all intuitively feel different social classes, we never acknowledge it, right? So a degree is a degree is a degree to people, right? So there's that woman, that girl on Twitter who was like, I got accepted to 50 universities, blah, blah, blah. And she got like 500,000 likes and, you know, a quarter million retweets. And then you look at the colleges that she posted, because she posted all 50, and you go, none of these are particularly worthwhile. Like, I could apply to one school that's better than all 50 of them, get into that. It literally implies that the other 50 are also accessible, right? Like, you see what I'm saying? It's just kind of silly at the end of the day. But everyone still, despite the reality of tiering, and you even see the reality of tiering in the cost, right? It's funny because the better the school, you actually pay less money. The better school. No one ever tells you that either. That's actually something I learned the hard way, because I was always kind of aimless. I always knew I could get into better schools, but I was like, I don't feel particularly insecure about my intellectual standing, right? So I was like, oh, well, I want to go here. It has a cool campus, XYZ. Yeah, my friends are there. So that's why the first school I went to was not particularly good. It wasn't bad, actually, but it's not good either. It was just, like, mediocre. And I went there, and I, you know, almost all of the debt that I accrued for college was from that school that I went to for a year, three semesters. I went to that school for three semesters. Three semesters, but I left in the third one. And almost the entirety of my debt from all 4 years, or I guess 5 years of college, because I went to a college later that was much better. And almost the entirety of the debt came from that first school, right? So I didn't learn, no one ever really told me this. I mean, they probably did actually, but I wasn't listening. I didn't really care. I definitely was not paying attention to the whole debt conversation. I know that for a fact. Like, many people told me, I literally didn't care. I wanted to go to art school. Like, I was going to put myself in multiple factors more debt. But I'm glad I didn't do that. Not that the situation is much better anyway because of administrative costs. But, you know, I'm glad that I didn't go to art school. But at the end of the day, there's still this tiering, right? But but because we don't acknowledge the tiering, and with the advent of social media and of various forms, especially social media's like platforms like Tumblr and platforms like TikTok, which, and Instagram as well, kind of, but to a lesser extent, that have a unifying process. Like, those platforms reward you for conformity, if that makes sense. So, like, for example, Twitter doesn't particularly reward you for conformity. Twitter rewards you for novelty and also for controversy, right? The point of Twitter is high iteration, and it not only does it have a high iteration rate, it also has, it also factors pretty much all engagement is pretty much worth the same thing. So if I get ratioed with quote tweets, that's effectively the same as a bunch of people quote tweeting and retweeting it just for the sake of the content, right? They don't really discriminate between the two, right? Whereas on TikTok, for example, if I try to do something that buck the curve, it is possible to get essentially the equivalent of getting quote tweeted and ratioed. Like, people can stitch it and, you know, dunk on you for hours, and that does happen. You see that quite a bit, but it's not nearly as often as just following a trend or conforming. You get far more views just like cookie cutter performing the current trend. It's just how the algorithm works. You actually get rewarded, as I've mentioned before on multiple episodes, you get rewarded for your conformity. It creates like a monoculture in a lot of ways. There are different sub niches, just like every other social media, but for the most part, you get rewarded for conforming. So with the advent of places like Tumblr and TikTok and other platforms that kind of create a unifying funneling effect, we've kind of created, and in addition to how many people go to school, to university now, and the fact that literally everyone goes to university and everyone picks up the social justice terminology from these platforms, everyone picks up that university slam poetry cadence, and they all use the same kind of corporate language, and it creates this neo-lib kitsch, as Gio says. And no, it's not kitsch. Kitsch is the neo-lib artistic kitsch is something different. It's like the flat art design, but it creates this like signal. It's a social signal that lets everyone know that you're part of the club and or you want to be part of the club. Often these people aren't even part of the club. They're just signaling. They're hoping to signal to the right person like, oh, I meet the qualifications. I conform in the correct way. I use the right language already. I'm already initiated. So incorporate me. I, on the other hand, because I unfortunately have this curse of authenticity, thanks to reading books. And again, I don't really recommend it, because who's to say, is it really, this is like the cipher moment in The Matrix. Am I, you know, why did I take the blue pill, as he's talking to the agent, right? And he's just like, I want to be rich. I want to be an actor. I want to be someone important, like an actor, right? That scene, I love that scene. And, you know, that's probably the most standout scene to me, the most memorable scene in The Matrix to me, funny enough, is the Cypher conversation. And it's such a great character moment, because it brings to light a very important point. Is it better to be unplugged, or is it better to stay in The Matrix, right? Do I really benefit from reading Heidegger and, you know, having an understanding of that I'm a being towards death, and that is the only way to avoid this anxiety about death or whatever is to live authentically, right? Am I really, and then as such, I shirk things like the neoliberal cadence and these like unifying cultural norms and blah, blah, blah. Is it really better that I've read Nietzsche or read this, that person, the other, right? Or is it better that I've read these FBI declassification documents or this, that, and the other thing? No, it's not. Well, it is. In some sense, it is better, because I feel I'm living my authentic self and I don't feel a nagging dissonance, right? I'm not having a mental breakdown on the timeline like some of these leftists are on a regular basis. I retweet them constantly. You all see it. Of these girls having literal mental breakdowns, of these blue checks having mental breakdowns on the timeline on a daily basis. I'm not doing that because I am living authentically, right? So I don't feel miserable on a day-to-day basis because I'm living my truth, right? But am I better off for it? Introspective level, I am. But on a societal level, I'm not reaping the benefits that I could easily have reaped had I just become your standard middle-class striving individual. So again, just as Cypher said, why oh why didn't I take the blue pill? But anyway, I'm gonna leave you go on my last break and let me get some of this work done on Tornviken.
Choose your destiny. Flawless victory. Choose your destiny. Flawless victory. Finish it.
So this is day two of this IKEA endeavor. So I decided to stop yesterday, right? I was planning on doing this final part after I'd finished to talk about my success in this endeavor, right? I was supposed to come on here and be like, yeah, I finally finished it, blah, blah, blah. This was a thrilling experience. And what actually happened? Instead, I'm telling you, I last night I got frustrated. Basically, the pieces are heavy because the last thing I'm building is this, like, multi-layered table type of thing. I don't know how to explain it. It's, like, halfway between it's like a bar table where it has, like, shelves underneath it, as well as, like, enough seating space. It's high enough and has enough seating space in order to have stool. Yeah, so this one is, like, you know, it has a little more of a complicated build to it, and the pieces are heavier because of the size. But what happens when you start building the bigger IKEA furniture, like, if you build, like, an end table or a desk or, like, something that's fairly basic, it's never usually that big of a problem. It's kind of just like, all right, step 1-3, it takes like 30 minutes and you're on with your day. If you start building any of the objects that are like a solid 150 pounds and higher, you start to run into some situations that are obnoxious. And especially when you're building it by yourself, right? And sometimes the instructions are, even though the instructions are always easy, IKEA is not complicated. But then, for example, like, I just had to do a piece right now where it's like a support beam. They told you to put the whole set, like, kind of like rotated along, doing like a 90 degree rotation about the X axis. So, like, if this is like a 3D plane XYZ, where X is horizontal, Y is you're still your flat, but like forward to back axis. X is like your left to right axis, and then Z would be your up and down axis. If you're doing like it's telling me to take a 90 degree rotation around the X axis. So it's like a 90 degree turn of the whole object, and putting the piece nearest you forward. And it's like, now that piece will be near your head. So how to do like a 90 degree turn, right? Now, interestingly, they tell you to do this 90-degree turn, and they tell you to put in a support beam, right? Now, the support beam is about 5 feet, no, like 4.5 feet long, right? So it's wood, it's like whatever, it's like the composite wood, and it's like 4.5 feet long, and it's connected by the, like, those cork little things, right? Well, the second you do that, and you put the 4.5 foot long pole support beam in, the weight of the support beam, because they told you to, as the diagram demonstrates, do the 90 degree axis rotation around the X axis, place in the support beam with the cork, connection things, the inlets, and then the weight of the support beam breaks the inlets, right? So this got me thinking. This, of course, was incredibly frustrating. I had to go get a drill and screw out the broken inlet. And that's where I'm sitting now. And now I'm pontificating about the broader implications of such a stupid design choice. But, like, also to bring this all together, I feel like that was like a metaphor for what I've been talking about in the previous parts about, like, signaling, right? It following this, the instructions as laid out, right? The common sense, if I was actually thinking about what I was doing, right, and not just rote following this prescriptive diagram about how to construct this IKEA furniture, it would be immediately obvious that the weight of the support beam cannot be maintained by the inlet. However, because I'm just following the what's been laid out for me, and doing things as indicated. Like, for example, did I even need to do the 90 degree rotation? I'm putting in a support beam, right? It's horizontal. I probably could have maintained its positioning where I had it before, or it's horizontal and laying on the ground, and I probably would have saved myself some effort, because I would be forced to support the other side of the beam, because obviously it can't support itself in suspended in midair, right? So I would have saved myself this potential hazard, right? And let's say even if I did do the 90 degree rotation about the x-axis, if I did this and was actually thinking and not just following this prescriptive diagram, I would have gone, oh, well, it's clear that it can't support its own weight, so I'm going to hold it and I'm going to do the next step, etc., right? But because I'm just following it without thinking, I'm just I'm like a puppet. Well, I'm not a puppet. I'm like, yeah, I'm just following step by step. I'm not actually putting any thought in, right? And I feel like that's what the social signaling of like complex language and of like and like the credentialism of you know, the striving elite classes, like they say the right words, right? Like they're talking about, they're citing the right sources, they're saying the right words, they're even following the they're in many cases they're following the arguments to their logical conclusions, right? But the consequences of basic common sense still apply. If I, for example, the argumentation of, let's say, veganism, right? I don't know about vegan. I don't really feel like I'm talking about veganism. But let's say like the climate change or something that's more like very, has a lot of social signal to it, right? The argumentation and the follow through of that argumentation to maintain consistency are very clear, right? So it's very clear that this would also mean that I should be pro population control. I should also be pro this. Like, you know what the prescribed set of follow up beliefs ought to be. Right, so you can make your arguments. You can also organize your life around this structure and they're worked out already. And I was just like generating whatever the next word was. Like, you already know what the prescribed ideas and follow up rationales ought to be, right? So you can just operate from that point of view. But just like I could have, just like I was simply operating by the prescribed construction methods, similarly, there are basic consequences to following these prescriptions that if you use even basic common sense, you can see. Basic common sense could have told me that was going to break the inlet, right? It doesn't require genius. It just requires perceiving reality and just being like present and perceiving what, and like thinking consciously and actively about what you're doing, right? A lot of the postmodern POMO stuff only really works. I mean, and by the way, everything's postmodern now, so it's not like you can escape it. I know everyone wants to be like, oh, postmodernism, blah, 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 and it's just some academic trash, right? And I've even talked about that with, I feel like Helios, could have been somebody else, about how, like, you know, postmodernism, what does that even mean, right? Maybe it was Logo. It was somebody. But, like, you can't escape it. This is just the era we're in, postmodernism. What does it mean specifically? Who knows? But it is, we all know on an intuitive level what it means, right? Trying to pin it down to a specific unchanging definition also by its own is kind of like an oxymoron in a lot of sense. It's a paradoxical because of what the topic at hand is. But yeah, so it's, if you think about basic, this is what being based is, in my personal opinion. I know that there's different definitions. Shout out Little B, right? I mean, it's probably the most in line with Little B's definition of being like extraordinarily authentic and true to yourself, regardless of what people say. That, right? So that's being based. I would say that in a lot of sense, in like a modern sense, now that it's based in cringe, is kind of like the continuum we're all operating on. I feel like being based is operating in base reality in a lot of senses, right? Actually being present and mindful and actually thinking authentically and critical and being present for what you're accomplishing. And this is why it's easy to have quote unquote hot takes when you're being based. And it's like, you're not really making a hot take. You're really just expressing what you see and what's clearly happening, right? But when you're in the fog of, you know, doctrine, none of these direct access to base reality is heretical, right? So you can't even You can't talk about things as they are. You have to follow the IKEA furniture prescriptive ideology, right? So if that means that you ought to, that you need to experience the break, you probably should have followed even more of the instructions and had a second person helping you, even though it's really a one person job. So I don't know. This actually brings me back to the red pill blue pill thing, right? Had I been blue pilled and just completely 100% compliant with the IKEA doctrine, I would have also had a second person building it with me, and I probably wouldn't even had this problem happen. That other person would have been holding the piece that's lacking structural integrity. Someone else would have been holding it, right? That's if I was following with complete compliance. But of course, I have to think for myself, and as a consequence of that, here I am. I just had to pull out a screw out the inlet. But anyway, that's about the. I've got the time. I'm going to finish this piece, but I don't think I'm going to come back on here after I'm done. I'm just going to ride out the frustration and watch some anime for the rest of the night. But if you enjoyed my diatribe on my self-awareness during this whole IKEA pilgrimage, if you will, then please like, share, subscribe, tell all your friends. Please, you know, click the notification bell if you're on YouTube, which I do plan to put all of these on YouTube, actually. I think I'm starting to get a lot more subscribers on YouTube, even though I haven't posted a video for months, so I really don't understand what's going on, but I'll put these up. And then please support the Patreon, if you please, por favor. It would be really, really helpful. That is version 4, patreon.com/version4, so that is VRSION, and then the number 4. Outside of that, it's been real, it's been fun, and I'll catch you guys later. Peace. Killing.